On another exciting edition of Animation Deliberation, our weekly coverage of Demon Slayer's entertainment arc comes to somewhat of an end. We may do a feedback episode, but more about that later, covering episode 11, No Matter How Many Lives. We will get right into that after some ads we have no say over whatsoever. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah. Okay, folks, welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. I am J. Scotty St. Clair, and
I am Zuhair Ali.
Zuhair, as I understand, you had some stuff you want to blurt out, so go for it. What you got for us?
Yeah, so, like, I'm relieved that the season is over, but before we get to that, there's just, like, so much stuff that I've had time for, because I'm, like, nursing my shoulder, so I can't work out as much, so more time at my table is always nice. first off, I caught up on Boruto, so it's, like, I feel like this has been a venture that's been going on for so many years. It's nice to just be, like, oh, I have to wait every week for episodes again. And it gives me more time to just look at other stuff instead of binging. Speaking of binging, I restarted Attack on Titan, and oh my god, I forgot how good the show is. I only ever finished season 2, so I'm excited to just go on so that we can record and talk about that, because from what I've heard, the latest and last season has been incredible. Super Bowl ads. Doctor Strange and Moon Knight look incredible. I am ecstatic. I cannot wait. I'm not watching any more trailers or ads. That's it for me. I'm cut off.
Yeah, I hear you there. I always try to avoid TV spots, but I'm really hoping that Marvel just gives us the benefit of the doubt, and that was the final trailer. But if not, I'm just going to have to put myself on a little bit of blackout, but hopefully between Attack on Titan, which is the next show we'll cover, and then the second half of Young Justice Season 4, when we get back into that, hopefully that'll be enough to distract me so that I can just go into the theater as fresh as possible. Not to mention, you brought up Moon Knight. We'll have that in between as well. We won't be covering it on this show, but I'm sure we'll drop little tidbits here and there about how we're enjoying that, because we love Marvel here. We do.
Yeah, and there's a lot of CGI that goes into it. That's animation, right? We'll find loopholes.
I'm totally willing to ride that caveat if you want to do a full-on review of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, because anybody that knows me knows I love Doctor Strange, and this one looks like it's going to be balls to the wall.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. All right, so Arcane, that is one of the shows that got brought up a lot on things that were good about 2021 and things that they're fascinated about. So watch the first episode. Very intriguing. Has a lot of similar artwork to Clone Wars, which I was really fascinated by. Okay. In terms of like everything looking so painterly. The action sequences, the design, from what I know of the story so far, very interesting, and I'm looking forward to finishing that up.
Okay, yeah. We might have to retroactively do that one, because like you said, a lot of people express some interest in it, and I've only heard like the highest praise and critical acclaim for it. One little thing I do want to mention is anybody that's been listening to our coverage of Demon Slayer so far for season 2, the Entertainment District arc, you may notice a voice is missing. That's because we're recording this on Valentine's Day. Yesterday was Super Bowl Sunday, so that's why we got all those great trailers. But Andrew Rogers, who's been with us throughout this coverage and is running our social media campaign, he's not with us tonight because he actually has a romantic partner that he has plans with. So with that said, he is going to submit a voicemail or an audio recording for us that we will play towards the end of the episode, so he will get to get his thoughts out there.
Whether that's lucky for him or not, we can let you decide.
That was good.
We get to record a podcast. My last point being that Pokemon Arceus is a lot of fun. I see, like, for like the first time them making a game of this style, there's obviously like some setbacks that could be stepped on, but for a first time, I'm liking the direction of this gameplay.
Okay. Good to know. I haven't been gaming quite as much, but it's not about Pokemon right now, but just with the art direction and style there, how it kind of like takes the anime and brings it to life. I am noticing, like, you brought up the Demon Slayer video game. I think it's the Hinokami Chronicles?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, just, I watched a trailer for that because I think I saw it on sale on online or something like that. And then I was thinking, if I do get some time to game, I definitely want to check this one out. So
it's not a hard one to get through.
Okay. Well, good to know.
Yeah, because I absolutely love the Ninja Storm series, and it's the same studio that did Hinokami Chronicles.
Okay.
So, like, I missed that game. I'm bummed they didn't do one for Boruto, but I was happy they did one for Demon Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, instead of the one-on-one action that I love about the Ninja Storm ones, it's more of, like, each demon that you face is like a boss event, and it's more like evasive and finding opportunities than it is like the one-on-one action. Okay. And sure, they have like side missions and then all the online stuff that you can just fight with other people, which all of that is like action-wise, it's so much fun, but I was a little let down in the story by that regard.
Okay. Yeah, the last video game I played that was like really based in anime was Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, which was like the first time they took like that fighting game mechanic and kind of translated it to an open world environment. I thought it was a fun game, but haven't really gone back to revisit it since I played through the story.
Yeah, nothing is top Tenkaichi 3 for me on PS2.
There you go. Old school. I like it. I like it.
Yep, that's my injury update. That's all the content I've been consuming lately.
Yeah, well, hang in there. We need you healthy and we need you strong.
My voice still works for now.
Exactly. All right, now that we've kept the people with bated breath for long enough, let's talk about this thing. Do you want to do the whole on a scale of yeah to yeah? Are you able to quantify that one this week?
I don't know.
No.
I think it would just come off as a sigh of relief. It would just be like a yeah.
Okay. I'll say for my purposes, I enjoyed the finale, but I was not overwhelmed. I was definitely more whelmed. Yes. Yeah.
I was borderline underwhelmed.
Yeah, I might be leaning towards that myself. I appreciate a lot of the things that we got. It was great to find out that basically all our heroes survived. I was very, very concerned for Tengen, and I was almost certain towards the end of this arc that he wasn't making it out alive, but pretty much everybody comes away unscathed, and a lot of that is thanks to Nezuko, and I think Nezuko got like the one really badass moment in the whole episode when we pick up right off the end of the last episode and her box is flying through the air and Gitaro's final blood size are kind of flying in all directions, and she uses her blood demon art again to burn them all.
Yeah, it was interesting because I didn't like all of that when I first watched it. And I'm glad we didn't record right after, because I kind of would have been a little annoyed. But the more that I thought about it, the more I kind of like redeemed it for myself. So like one of the things was like, oh, now she wakes up, not when she hit the box. But it's like she actually did bleed. So I guess that did trigger her fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought it was kind of a cop out for like Nezuko to just be able to fix everybody. But then I thought back and I was like, no, her powers did kick in for the webs in the first season. Right. It did account for the people who were like making our heroes dream. So there has been like a consistency of her powers able to neutralize or fight against like the smaller effects of blood demon art. So I didn't quite catch on that right away. Like, man, if you're going to throw in like a bunch of dialogue explaining things, like that would have been the time to do it. But eventually I caught on.
Yeah.
So it was well done. I'm glad that she got to like have a little bit of a moment. Her having just the dot eyes and giving Tanjiro a piggyback ride every way was the cutest. I loved it.
Yeah.
And with all the emotional strain that this show has given us, like from Mugen Train, even to this whole entertainment district, I was actually kind of relieved that this episode was a little more lighthearted, because they are actually very good about communicating with us, and we have a season 3 confirmed. Hooray!
Woo-hoo!
And because we know all of that, I'm okay with this one being a little more down to earth and relaxed and just kind of giving us the opportunity to have that sigh of relief.
Yeah, I think the sigh of relief is a great way to describe it. And it is great to know that we have season three coming. It's already in the works. But I think I would have preferred maybe just a little bit more setup to like have things to anticipate and look forward to a little bit. But I do agree with you. It was a sigh of relief. And I was surprised at the amount of humor. Yeah, you brought up Nezuko's little her eyes, and then Tanjiro riding around on her was a total reversal of her always being, you know, strapped to his back. But then I'm sure this got on your nerves a little bit when Zenitsu just like starts crying out and he's back to his old self and he's just like, I'm scared and I'm hurt and are my legs broken? Who would do this to me?
I was like, dude, you are such a cool character. And he started just screaming and wailing. And I was like, Nezuko, can you like give him your gag for a little bit? Like, calm him down. Yeah. Then, like, what was this thing about, like, what do you mean you're glad I'm okay? I'm not okay. My legs, I can't feel my legs. And then he's taught, like, after. It is such an after fact that Inosuke's heart rate is going down. Like, that wasn't your concern? You're that bitchy about your legs that you're not going to talk about your friend dying? You don't want to direct attention to the guy who needs CPR?
Right. Not to take anything away from me, but his heart is growing fainter and fainter.
You selfish little shit. I'm so sorry, but like, it has to be said.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good. It does need to be said. He's a much more enjoyable character when he's in his sleepwalking mode. But
yes,
you need that humor. You need that humor. And then Inosuke, I would have liked to spend a little bit more time with him, but what we got was, you know, in keeping with his character. As soon as he comes to, he's hungry. Get him something to eat. And then Tanjiro is just so happy to see him alive and somewhat well. And he's just like, you're creeping me out.
He just wasn't having the hugs at all.
Yeah.
And in all that time, it's not even like, let's take this mask off so that he can breathe a little bit. Like, leave it on.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Like, because isn't it technically filled with blood right now? He was coughing up a lot of blood.
Yeah, there's still blood coming out of his snout. So, I mean, that can't be comfortable.
Nah.
Yeah. And then we transition over to Tengen with his three wives, and the comedy just continues with Suma being, you know, totally beside herself. To where Makio starts like forcing her to eat rocks because like Tengen is trying to talk and give like his final things. And he's like, really? I'm not even going to be able to give like my final words. I'm going to die without being able to say my final words.
I forgot about the rock. She actually picked one up. Suma's just holding onto her hand, still crying. And then I was actually thinking as soon as, first off, the way that Nezuko just came up and tapped him was adorable. I love her little sound effects so much. But I was like, oh my god, they're going to think she's going to cremate him. And the second he lit up, that's the first thing that Suma said. He's like, it's not even dead and you're cremating him. It's like, you're a bad young lady. You're a terrible child. How could you do that?
Yeah. It was pretty great, though, because that's what I was thinking, too. It was like the first time she used it, and you kind of saw whoever she was using it on that whole area just kind of go up in flames. It was like, what's happening right now? Okay.
Yeah.
It's just burning the poison. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I had to think back on that on Mugen Train quite a bit because that's what woke Tanjiro up. That's what killed the line. Tanjiro even had the line. It's like, I don't even think like my blade should cut through this. Like, Nezuko, can you handle the rest of these?
Mm-hmm.
So her, I guess just her demon, like, instinct, like the nature versus nurture part, like the nature's kicking in to where she just has this instinct of understanding like what her powers do and to what level she can handle them.
Yeah. And you talk about like Suma freaking out on her, but like the one like still from that sequence that'll like stick out to me forever is when it's like a back shot and like Tengen's in the corner, and then Suma like turns around when she realizes he's actually alive, and she just gets like the biggest eyes and kind of like the derpy mouth that kind of reminds me of Rick and Morty a little bit. It's been a while since we've seen such like goofy imagery like that, but it was much needed after everything we just went through.
So, Tengen-sama, you're alive, Tengen-sama.
Yeah. I was trying to look up the serpent Hashira's name, because then he shows up, and that's like one of the few things that like gave some idea of where the future is going. And from what I remember about him, he was kind of one of the naysayers in terms of like that back in season one when we had, you know, Tanjiro and Nezuko kind of standing trial with the master and all the Hashira. I remember the Wind Hashira and the Serpent Hashira in particular being kind of the worst of the naysayers, but I'm having a hard time bringing up his name. But
Obani he was Iguro?
Okay, Iguro. Okay, good to know. Because he is not a nice guy.
Nah, and Tengen pointed that out too. He was like, "Hey, guess what? Guess which one's reaching his potential already? The one that you hate." Like, but he remembered his name. It's like, what? Tanjiro Kamado's the one that's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to point out, I called it in a previous podcast where I said that, like, even though they've done it before, I'm expecting a second Hashira to show up. He right. was late, but I called
he was very
it.
Late.
He showed up. And then yeah. Shuma reminded him of that, which the serpent shut her up real quick.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very dismissive of Tengen and what's been accomplished there. He's like, yeah, they were upper rank six, but they were at six, not any higher than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you managed to kill them, but how long are you going to be out of the fight? And that's when Tengen's like, no, I'm retiring. And it kind of takes me back to that episode when we had the flashback to he and his wives, when Hinatsuru was like, hey, once we've defeated an upper rank demon, that's when we will kind of atone for everything we've done, and then we can go back and live normal lives. And mm-hmm. I think she said at that point in time, like, all four of us might not be together at that point in time.
Yeah.
But it's awesome to see that they are. But that's not good for this. What's his name again? The Snake Hashira? Serpent Hashira?
Iguro?
Iguro, yeah. Iguro doesn't want to hear that. He's like, between Rengoku being out and we still haven't replaced him, and now you, it's like, now's not the time for you to be retiring. You should fight until you die.
Yeah, he said the fight till you die was like very blunt. And then him saying like these younger guys aren't reaching their full potential. Like, I'd rather have you with one hand than any of these like brats coming up, basically.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to get his comeuppance, I think. Either that or he's going to earn a begrudging respect for our three heroes, or four heroes, I should say, because Nezuko's really... really stepped up in a big way lately.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. The other thing that kind of stuck out to me before we get into Gitaro and Daki's backstory, which kind of took up most of the episode for better or for worse, is the little knife that I think it was Tanjiro that he used to like absorb the blood of the Kazuki. Mm-hmm. And then it was taken away by a little cat who like almost was like a Cheshire cat. He like faded away. Disappeared. Have we seen that cat before? Am I just not remembering?
In the first season, there was an arc where they meet a demon who's actually working against
Muzan.
What? Yes, Muzan. Sorry.
Yeah.
She's working against him. She's helping Tanjiro like find a cure for being a demon, and the task
That's
that
right.
she gave Tanjiro was to get blood from demons that he slays, especially the higher ranking one. It has more of Muzan's blood and more of the information that she needs to work with. So I'm
there
glad that it took me a second too, but then I was like, oh yeah, that was a whole important arc that they just, again, like the stuff I need reminders of, it's the stuff they're not explaining at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad we're getting there, but it's like, wait, what was that whole arc about again?
Yeah, I'm really glad you remembered that, because now that you say it, I remember everything. But yeah, that I think it was like maybe a 1-2 episode arc in the first season. So it's actually really been quite some time since we've seen her. So
it was a couple, because that's where you had the guy who had like the direction arrows and the girl with like the dodgeballs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And she had like the young apprentice who was very protective of her, and he got like beheaded.
Yeah.
And that's when you found out that, or was he beheaded? No, he like suffered a grave head injury. But yeah, that's when you found out that they were demons.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And he was like, yeah, like you said, he was super defensive, and it was like, how dare you, like, look at her, she's the most beautiful thing in the world, and blah, blah,
yeah.
blah.
That guy.
Yep. And she called, like, Nezuko ugly, and then he, like, Tanjiro started flipping. I was like, my sister's beautiful, who do you think you are? Because, yeah, that was a fun fight sequence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of the highlights of season one for sure. Well, it's kind of interesting that it was those two demons, because now we're at the end of the next kind of partnership between two demons that we've really seen, and that is Kitaro and Daki. And kind of what I guessed in the last episode is that we were going to get that backstory, because we always do. Tanjiro has that moment to, you know, show some empathy and relate to them as human beings. But I wasn't expecting it to take up the majority of the episode the way it did. And in retrospect, I think it's one of the elements of the episode that kind of brings it down a little bit for me, just in terms of like momentum and whatnot. I feel like more of that could have been seeded previously so that we didn't have to spend such a solid chunk of the episode there. But, you know, we talked about Daki having those flashbacks being burned, so we know exactly how that happened now. And then just in terms of like their heads being chopped off and like rolling to face each other, they immediately start blaming each other.
Yeah.
That's
so they really are siblings.
Yeah. But we learned that Daki's name was actually Ume, and that she was named after the disease that killed her mother. They were basically born into poverty in the entertainment district, and the entertainment district is not a place that children are really welcome. They're seen as just an extra burden, and Gitaro's mother tried to kill him before he was born and continued to do so even after he was born. So Jeez. The guy has not had an easy life.
Nah. They gave the origin of like what got him into the sickle too. It was like his only toy because somebody left it behind.
Yeah. And he basically had rocks thrown at him because he was ugly and smelled bad, and that just kind of set him on this path to become reviled by society. And so he found his worth in instilling fear, and he found out that he was a pretty good fighter, so he started collecting. He became like a debt collector, but was very cruel in that process. And the one redeeming thing he had going in his life was his sister, and she was very beautiful and pretty much the exact opposite of him, but he raised her, so he taught her everything that he knew, and that's to take any time you can, don't show any sign of weakness. So that put her in some trouble with a samurai when she used a hairpin to stab out his eye, and he retaliated by burning her alive.
Yeah,
which is a little bit of an overreaction, but
all of that just for one measly eye.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
I'm not going to lie. I've been practicing it. I've been so fascinated with that voice that like even I was rewatching some of the episodes, like I can't remember like the actual Japanese term for it, but it's like every time he said disgrace, like he said that word like over and over and over again. So when he was talking about like, you know, Tanjiro's scar and stuff like that, like I was trying to like word it with it. I was like, man, this voice actor does such a good job. And like, he broke away from a lot of that this episode. Like, you heard him talk a little more normally.
Sure.
I want to say, like, without that grittiness and without that strain in his voice.
Sure.
I caught on to it a little bit, but, man, just hats off to his performance overall.
Yeah, totally. He's definitely one of the standout voices. I watched season one with the dub, so I was hearing everything in English, but, man, the Japanese voice artists are so talented, and his was definitely very, very unique and just sold everything about that character being grotesque and creepy and just an element of like venom and danger to everything he does, which is fitting with his blood sites being loaded with poison.
Yeah.
But he did have a cool moment when he was still a human, when after he got slashed in the back by the samurai, then the lady that ran the household that Ume was a part of was basically just talking all the shit about him. And then he does a backflip and nails her in the forehead. Like, I was kind of like, hey, you're a little justified there. That was satisfying.
Yeah, right? Like, he has a severed spine at this point and so does that. Yeah. And then does the uppercut slash on the samurai's face. I was like, whoa! And you're saying animated stuff is for kids? Please.
Oh, yeah. This is for a mature audience, indeed. But from there, they're both basically on death's door. It's a miracle that Ume, aka Daki, is still alive at this point, but he's just kind of trudging along, just kind of waiting to die. No one's going to help them. They're completely reviled. And then that's when we have a newcomer, someone we haven't seen before, a new demon with, I must say, very pretty eyes.
Yeah.
And did we get a number? I was trying to pay attention. I think they just said upper the entire time. Okay, so yeah, we have no idea what level he's at, but he offers to give his blood in the hopes that maybe they will reach the upper ranks like he did. And that's all we really see from him, other than the fact that he's like holding a woman like multiple pieces and drops her head and her rest of her body when he sees these two. And definitely looking forward to seeing more from that guy.
Yeah, he's just like he's just beautiful. Like he has a charm and charisma about him, and just much mystery.
Yeah. Hopefully, with the announced season 3, we'll be learning a little bit more about him.
Yeah, the fandom wikis haven't even like updated it.
Okay, interesting.
It's cool though. The main picture is like a silhouette of all of them, and you can see him like to the far right.
Okay. Yeah, he was definitely a decent looking guy for a demon. And like I said, the thing that stuck out to me was his eyes were like iridescent and almost like rainbow colored. So yeah. Pretty easy on the eyes, which is strange to say about a demon and a male demon for my particular taste. So.
Yeah. We're all forward here.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think. From there, I think that kind of wraps up their story. Then it's just kind of them in limbo with the decision, you know, to head towards the light or towards the flames. And he's basically trying to convince Daki to get away from him and let him descend into hell and let her, I guess, go to Nirvana or what have you. And she's like, hey, don't you dare leave me. Don't you remember what you promised me? And that kind of flashes back to when they were young and in the snow and basically freezing to death, and he made that promise that as long as they're together, nothing could defeat them. And he basically takes her back on his, gives her a piggyback ride into the flames of hell.
Yeah, as that part was going on, I was remembering you saying last week that this was supposed to be a longer episode. So as that went into the detail it did, I was like, maybe that's why they kept it longer, just so that they could wrap this up.
Yeah, the reports I saw said it was supposed to be a 45-minute episode, and I think my watch on Hulu clocked in around like 33 or 34 minutes. So
we count for credits, and I guess when they put commercials and stuff in real time. And
yeah, that's what I was guessing was the commercial breaks and whatnot. But yep, then we flash forward back to Tanjiro, who's basically watching the last bits of Gitaro disintegrate, and you know he says that he hopes they made up, but we know that they did.
It was funny that he was just kind of like covering his mouth and he couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good old Tanjiro for you. He has love even for his enemies.
Which we hadn't, I mean, I guess we saw it a little bit towards the beginning when he was like helping around the house a lot when he was stolen in disguise. But there, we forget that there is that like level of empathy with him and that level of connection that he has with people that people just like can't understand or shake off. So the little, as much as we love the beauty and like all the action sequences and the detail and the design, it's nice that they're still adding the touch of like, hey, here's these people as characters. Like, don't forget, you know, where they come from and how they are and this and that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, the show sets a high bar in terms of the quality of animation and the just bombastic nature of the action, the number of colors that we get to see on screen. But it would all be for naught if it weren't for the excellent character development and growth. And that even goes for the demons. So I'm really excited to learn more about Muzan. And speaking of Muzan, That was the real only mention that we got of them this episode was when it flashed to the master, who does not look like he's doing well. It looks like his disease has continued to spread down his face, and he's constantly coughing up blood to the point where I didn't realize that was his family, but I think he confirms that like when he's saying, yeah, because of Tanjiro's progress, this is the first time, and I can't remember how long he said, but this is basically a new era. This is the first time that defeating these demons actually seems like a possibility.
I want to say he said 100 years.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure. Yeah, 100 years sounds right. So,
we don't know if it was like the younger ones or the one at his bedside that was saying father.
Mm.
But one of them definitely were.
Yeah, yeah.
And I noticed that, like, I saw it, but I didn't quite notice that, like, he still has black hair.
Uh-huh.
So typically, like, you know, when a disease is taking over to that extent, like, you know, your hair starts to gray and stuff. So
sure.
He must still be, like, relatively young.
Yeah, I would think so. He seems on the younger side in terms of, like, physical appearance outside of what the disease is doing to him. But the way he speaks gives the impression that he's been around for a lot longer. But I don't know. And we're just talking about character growth and development. It'll be great to learn more about him. He's still somewhat of a mysterious character in that regard.
His name is Kaguya.
Kaguya. Okay. Master Kaguya. Well, I mean, all the Hashira have the utmost respect for him, even though he's very different in temperament than a lot of them. The Wind Hashira and the Serpent Hashira, especially. Whoa.
Homeboy's 23.
Wow. So he's the same age as Tengen. I would not have guessed that.
And he calls all of them his children.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Oh, he has a wife, two daughters, three, okay. Four daughters.
Okay.
And a son.
Okay. Maybe it's like a generational thing, because it seems like, I can't remember the dialogue for sure, but Muzan has done something to his family, and maybe that's in connection to his disease, or maybe they're related. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying not to read too much because I don't want manga spoilers, but I'm just really curious at the same time.
Yeah, I hear you there. I'm trying to go into this as blind as possible, and so far it's been for my benefit. Without changing gears too much, if you have more to say, feel free. But the other thing I'm thinking about is that was Asuka that we saw get teleported to the Infinity Castle, right?
Akaza, yes.
Akaza, excuse me. Yeah. Okay, so that's the first time we've seen him since his departure earlier on in the season, and I couldn't help but think when we saw the interior there, I very much got like Tower of Fate vibes for our young Justice listeners. Oh yeah, 100%.
Like, yeah. Could you imagine like Dr. Fate just chilling there, like, what are you? Oh, sorry, wrong. wrong dimension.
Yeah, yeah. Or, why can't I think of the witch boy's name?
Clarion.
Clarion. That's how I was thinking. Him still being lost. Like, oh.
What are you doing here?
Wrong dimension.
Get out.
No. get him, Teagle. Yeah, so I'm not sure I have much more to say about the episode, so I open up the floor to you, and then we can kind of pivot to
feedback. They mentioned that the only time they get called in that is when an upper demon is killed.
Right.
And, of course, they lost two, so that's a big meeting in which Muzan will not be happy.
Right.
I'm wondering if Master Kaguya actually has, like, a demon-related poison, and if that's something that Nezuko can just be like, guess what I learned how to do? But, like, it meant his performance was amazing, too. I'm sorry I don't keep up with any of the voice actors' names, whether it is anime or Hollywood, but, man, his performance of just, you know, coughing up blood and remembering their names and, like, still having that sickly tone while just being so enthused of like how happy he is. It was really cool. And you know, you see two of the crows like kind of like jumping around with him, like kind of reacting to the news and the fact that they gave, which transitions to like, I'm confused about the crows. Cause if it was as simple as Tanjiro saying, let me send one of the crows to get Lady Shinobu, it's like, shouldn't they have been around the whole time? And the second that they saw the fight go on, go grab another Hashira or go grab medical or somebody to come intervene. Like, you see that they're evacuating cities and stuff. Like, the crow should have been on that a lot quicker, which I guess that's how Snake Boy showed up. But that was the dialogue just kind of made me go, like, do those crows just literally wait for? And there's, if each Demon Slayer has their own, there was four crows on site. Like, they could have been like, hey, I'll watch. You go get somebody. Like, it just, the dialogue confused me a little bit.
Yeah. That's fair, though. And one of the things, speaking of dialogue, that kind of stuck out to me, I didn't really pick up on it until right now when you're talking about the crows, is like, in folklore and literature, crows and ravens are often like a sign of a bad omen. And it kind of makes sense in the context of this world that anytime Demon Slayer is around, it's because a demon is around, which would be a negative thing. But I think the master, Kageya,
mm-hmm.
I think he actually used the term omen when he talked about the potential to actually be able to take Muzan yes. out in his lifetime, which is kind of cool, because normally to me an omen is a bad thing, but it's a bad thing for Muzan, but it's a great Muzan, but it's a great thing for the Demon Slayer core. Good use of language there. I like the homage.
This is interesting. In Japan, the crow symbolizes gratitude, family, love, and the most common is the divine messenger who represents the good omen. But in other cultures, for example, it has negative symbology. So, yeah, apparently Japanese actually look at crows in a positive manner.
Well, there we go. Yeah, it's good to get that Eastern civilization versus Western civilization. It's good to learn something. That's why.
Is that like how we see pigeons?
Or doves, maybe?
Messenger dove.
Carrier pigeon, messenger dove. I like it. Okay. Unless you got anything else, this is the point in the episode that we will let our esteemed fellow host, Mr. Rogers, Mr. Andrew Rogers, give his feedback. So I will cue that up now.
Hey, everybody. This is Andrew Rogers. Those of you who are fans of the show, you will recognize my voice from all of the past Demon Slayer coverage. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it this week, so I still wanted to write in and give my thoughts here on what happened in this episode. I know Jay Scotty and Zuhair are going to do a fantastic job talking about it, but I still wanted to throw out some things for you guys to be able to hear. Really, this was the perfect way that I think this season could have ended. If this was a perfectly wrapped present on Christmas, this was just the bow on top. You know, it was everything that you wanted to completely round this out. We've been talking about what the deal is with Gyutaro and Daki this whole time, and I didn't think they were redeemable characters. I really didn't. But the fact that they had me crying over what was going on at the end of this episode, by the time you found their entire stories, and the fact that they, you know, weren't going to go into the light together, but instead were still going to go through the flames, was just so moving, so emotional, so beautifully well written. I've talked at length about the music this season, and I'm going to do it again. They just had perfect orchestral overtones throughout the entirety of this episode in ways that it doesn't feel like the show usually delves into. They do a lot more with horns than it feels like they do with, you know, the sad violin. So to hear that difference as opposed to the more exciting things was just so moving. So amazing. And then, you know, looking at everything we had with our characters to know that they're all okay, it makes you happy. And they put so much perfect comedy into it. The fact that Tengen was sad that he couldn't get his last words out there, you know, you can't help but to laugh at that. And then again, they bring it back into these moving moments. I was tearing up yet again seeing Nezuko carry around Tanjiro. We talked that, you know, brothers take care of sisters, sisters take care of brothers. Didn't matter who was older or younger, it was her turn to be like, no, get on my back, it's totally okay. You know, I absolutely loved so much of what this episode had to offer. And like I said, it's a perfect way to round it out. I know it may not have been the most action-packed thing, but that's not necessarily what you want. That's what the penultimate episode is for. So again, I could kind of keep going on, but I want to keep it short as to not overlap my two co-hosts too much. So can't wait to hear what those guys have to say. Thank you all for listening, and if you think it's cool to be able to hear my voice on the episode, just remember you guys can do this too. The feedback on our email is for feedback both about the show and about the episode, so if you guys want to kind of get your own thoughts out there, maybe even hear your own voice on the show, feel free to write into the email, animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you guys again. Good luck, Jay Scotty and Zuhair, and as always, until next week, muscle muscle.
Okay, unfortunately, at the time of this recording, we cannot respond in real time to Andrew's feedback, but I'm sure, you know, given his previous appearances, he's always a very insightful dude with a lot of good takeaways. And I have no doubt that's the case this time around. So I talked about the potential for a feedback episode. Hopefully that is something we can do if there's enough interest out there. I highly encourage you to hit us up on our social medias. We will put a call to action out on the Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. But in the meantime, if you'd like to submit some feedback, you can do so with a voice recording or a written email. You can do that to animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com. Zuhair, is there anything you'd like to let the people know about or talk about before we get out of here?
Just kind of the last, I guess, point regarding the season as a whole is that this season, just like Mugen Train, like felt like a movie. There's a page on YouTube that takes the action scenes and kind of cuts out all the extra dialogue and just seams it through. And it's like the last three or four episodes without the extra dialogue was actually like 15 minutes of a movie.
Uh-huh.
So I like this really cinematic quality that they're going for. As much as I love the seasons and I like that emotional, oh my God, what's happening for every week? Like, if every season was a movie, I wouldn't be mad about that either. I'd have to go to the theaters 4 times and just binge it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I would not be opposed to catching this just insane level of action and detail on the big screen. It would be an absolute delight and pleasure.
Yeah, and we got our Mist Hosher, Mr. Tokito, coming up in season 3. So, yeah, lots to look forward to. But I'm glad that I can take an emotional sigh of relief for my characters.
Definitely. It's well deserved. We need that. And yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Mist Hashira being featured in the promotional art for season 3, because just right off the bat, not knowing anything about the individual Hashira really, he was the one that kind of struck a chord with me. I like the color scheme. I'm partial to the color green. And just his almost too laid back demeanor. Like, he's almost kind of like checked out and a little apathetic. Like, oh, this is kind of boring. What's going on?
Right.
Can't wait to learn more about him. We it was earlier on in the season, but you guys, when you and Andrew were breaking down the requirements to become a Hashira, that's when we learned that he became a Hashira within like 2 months of picking up the sword. So that's quite a feat. It'll be great to learn more about him and what makes him tick.
Yeah. And with us knowing that Tanjiro's learning how to mix elements together, he's kind of like the prime example of how to do that too. So there might be more mentorship coming his way.
Ooh, yeah. Hopefully he can make it out of the season without like losing a limb or worse, dying. But we shall see. We shall see. Maybe the Hashira will finally learn to get there on time.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, I think it's the time of the episode where we will plug stuff. So we will plug the things that we have going on. Plug stuff leaves too much to the imagination for me.
the typical MCU cast line popped in my head right away.
I know what you're talking about.
If you know, you know.
Yes, yes. So this was the finale for Demon Slayer. Later on this week, the finale for Peacemaker, at least the first season. I don't know if it's getting a second season. It sounds like it may be on it might be on the table. James Gunn did a great job. I've been appearing on the last few episodes of Pandavision, and I will do so this week as well. So wherever you get your podcasts, check out Pandavision Peacemaker. We're having a lot of fun with that series on HBO Max. Other than that, the one thing I have going on is the review contest. I meant to bring it up at the beginning of the episode, but first 5 new reviews or updated reviews we get for the podcast, either on Apple Podcasts or if you do it through another means, just let us know. I will enter you into a drawing, and then you can potentially win a custom commission cartoon from me. So if you want to check out my artwork, take a look at jscottyforreal. That's the number 4 R-E-E-L. That's my Instagram. You can check out what I have going on there, and I'd love the opportunity to create some art for our listeners.
A drawing for a drawing.
There we go. A drawing for a drawing. Well done. Well done. That's why we keep you around, Zuhair.
I'm glad I have value. Okay.
All right. So I think that'll do it for this week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. That's TOONIN.
Stay whelmed. Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SPChat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.